Today is December 7th, 2018. It is 10:35. I am currently in the historic DeKalb courthouse and I am interviewing Charles Turner.
Why don't you tell me a little about yourself? What was your life like when you were growing up?
My life when I was growing up was cool. You don't realize that you have disadvantages and you're poor until you get old enough to look back. You know that everything is not always right. A lot of things are not, but they don't impact you in a way. If you have friends, and this is my upbringing, but if you have friends and sisters and brothers that you can deal with in a way that you get along. So even though in the eyes of society we didn't have that much, we were pretty cool.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
At that time I was the oldest of 8. That was 10 of us in totality, but my oldest brother died at birth, and I had a brother that died between some of my siblings. But there was 5 boys, 3 girls. And we, now there's only 5 of us left. So pretty close. We all get fussed and fight just like every other group of family, but most of all, we stuck together pretty good up until even to now. So as far as sisters and brothers.
What did your parents do?
My father would actually, he did a lot of stuff, but he worked in the younger days more as a mechanic. He worked for trucking companies. He actually worked here in Decatur on the square. There used to be an auto company right here on the square, and he worked for them for a while. Then over the years, he worked at different jobs. Then he had side jobs. Did what he had to do to take care of them. And my mother, she stayed at home. A few times she worked as a domestic, but basically she was a housewife.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. So when you say your mother worked as a domestic, what do you mean? She just worked from home primarily?
She worked, no, you're talking about domestic as being a housewife, but she, a domestic back in those days was when you worked in the white household. So she probably worked for a couple of white women that my daddy worked for on the side. So.
Did she ever talk about like what kind of work she did or her experience?
Not really. My mother was very opinionated lady, and she told you how she felt, and she didn't take much scruff from many people. So, you know, working like that didn't do too well because she could have gotten a lot of trouble. She didn't care too much of who it was. If you got on her nerve, Ella would tell you how she felt.
So you mentioned like you didn't realize at the time that you were poor. What time did you realize about?
Oh, well, as I got older, I remember, not having enough to, you only have a couple of pair of pants. You got like new clothes for school around Easter. When Easter came, you got clothes and Christmas, and these were some of the things that carried you through the year. Your dress clothes and maybe a couple of pair of jeans, and you had those that you, and you wore a lot of hand-me-downs from, I remember this one lady, a white woman, her name was Miss Hamilton. And my daddy used to clean her yard and stuff. She had a son named Jimmy. And Jimmy had multiple dystrophy. And she used to send some of his clothes and stuff. And I could wear his clothes. So, you know, like, they were really pretty nice clothes. So we utilized hand-me-downs, and then, you know, like, they go down to the next brother, because I had a brother that was exactly, what, I was born, Richard was about 9 months, 9 or 10 months younger than I was. And so he was born in 49, I was born in 48.
Growing up, did your parents ever talk about World War II?
My father was in the military, and he never talked about his military service. And I don't think I ever asked him about it until he got grown, and he still didn't talk about it. But what I'm doing now is I've sent off for his military records to try to find, because I found a photograph of him in his uniform once. I was at my uncle's house, his brother, and we were going through an old Bible, and that fell out a photograph of my dad in his uniform. So they gave me, it's, you know, made me feel kind of cool, because I've been in the military too, you know, like that connectivity.
So where exactly did you grow up?
I did not grow up. And I was born in Florida, Tallahassee, and we moved here. It's funny, I can remember some of the things, but we moved from Tallahassee to Ellaville, Georgia. I could have been around maybe three or four, but I can remember my grandmother's house. And when I got old, I used to think it was this big house and stuff. So one time we went back to see the place, but this little shotgun shack then sit up. And it wasn't too much bigger than the room if you really looked at it. But back in my mind in those days, it was the biggest, because I always remember my granddad. And I remember my granddad just had this room off to the side. And you go in, you had a room over here, and this is where we slept. And you go through, in the room there was a fireplace. You had that bed over here, all that clutter and everything in that same room. Fireplace, this big shotgun over that used to hang over the doorway so he could always grab. Then you went through that room right there, and you went into the kitchen. I don't remember that kitchen because the big stove, it had one of those two-tier stoves that you could sit down and stuff. And she used to always have fatback on that stove. You know what fatback is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fatback is a part of the hog.
Okay.
It's the outer portion of bacon. And they use it to get the fat off of it to use for frying. Yeah. It is where lard comes from. And she used to have that on the stove always. And you could look out the window, you could see the church down the street, the pot out there where she made kindling soap and all of that stuff. But it's funny that those memories have always stuck in my head. And also, he had a little bitty smokehouse where tobacco, he used to smoke his tobacco. And that's when I learned that you never want to chew tobacco. You kept telling me, you know, mess with that tobacco. So they used to have a braided glass. So I got some. I was sick of the dog. And they let me stay sick. But go ahead.
So where did you go after that? We were talking about
the military. Okay, when we left there, my father had come to Atlanta to look for work.
Mm.
So we left there and we came here to Atlanta. We lived over near McDaniel Street, back over in that area. Then we moved to Carver Homes. That was about 1950-something, because I was about six, 5 or 6, because I remember going to the first and second grade there, Slater Elementary. And people talk about the projects, but the projects back in those days was really built for white people as an offshoot of the war men coming back. But you also had African-American projects too, and all of them was really nice. They were really, really nice. And I remember this one place that we lived, I would get up in the morning, and back then you weren't afraid to, a kid wasn't afraid to come outside. But it was one thing about, because we lived on this hill, and I could always stand because we were that hill was facing east, because I always could see the sun coming up in the morning. It was always so good to see that sun coming up. And from there we left, we moved from there, and we moved. We moved to Decatur. That's where we moved to Decatur. Because I remember that, going to Beacon Elementary School. Remember being in the second grade there, because my Sunday school teacher, Miss McFarland, was also my school teacher. We spent a lot of time in church. God, we spent a lot of Southern Baptist. My dad was a deacon there at Thankful, when it used to be on Atlanta Avenue. That's where I got baptized at. And so go to Sunday school, 11 o'clock service, evening service, I mean regular service, then evening service, then you went to Wednesday night prayer meeting. I was so glad when I got out of this. I could tell you just about everybody in the Bible who begat everybody. But at the church, Reverend Tucker used to have this thing at Sunday night to see if you listened in Sunday school. And he would have this little contest between the kids. And he would give out a dollar, but he would give it in increments where you had, like, I think it was two or three questions for a couple of questions for a quarter. Then you had one big one for 75 cents or something like that. We had school Monday, because I studied in Bibles and stuff like that. And let's see, what else? Thankful. I went to Beacon Elementary School for about a couple of years. That was before they built Trinity High School, because when they started building on Trinity, we were living on Southbrook Court. Southbrook Court is not there anymore. We were Southbrook Court was after Herring Street. Southbrook Court used to be Herring Street and all of that, and the school and stuff used to be over there. And that area, even though it was nice then, it was right across the street from us, it was this old sanctified holiness church right on the corner. And in the evening, they had the tambourines and the drums, and they'd be singing and stuff, and they could send you to hell, I mean, like, just by. But this one morning, I woke up, I should have stayed in the bed a lot as a kid, but anyway, this one morning I woke up, and I went outside, and they had a pool. In the back of the church, there was a little pond, and they did baptizing in it, but that was the first time I had seen it. And they had all of these folks getting ready to get baptized, they were in these white robes, I thought they were ghosts. I just scared to do it. I went back out. Okay, what else you want to know?
So what was your education like?
Education was that you gotta learn. You gotta learn. That is your key. And I love reading. I love reading, but I read as a kid a lot of biographies. I read and I love fairy tales. Hans Christian Andersen, the Grimm brothers, all that stuff. Northern mythologies. I read because you kind of always, no matter how hard things were, there was a possibility that if you work your way out of it, you can get out of it. And in a lot of ways, I still believe in fairy tales. And so, but I went on this, but I look at, because I keep records of a lot of stuff. My grades were not the best in the world, but I must have had a pretty good attitude, because one of my teachers told my dad, if it wasn't for his attitude, I'd have threw his ass out. Yeah, I questioned people a lot. I challenged the system, even at a young age, which I meant a lot of trouble, a lot of problems, but it also gave me a chance, because sometimes people want you to challenge the system and don't accept everything as it is. So I went on, I graduated from high school. I went to Pry Street, Edgewood, Reynolds Town, Wesley Avenue, Slater. I went to four elementary schools.
Wow.
I went to four different elementary schools. Then I started at David T. Howard for high school. And one of my grades still wasn't that good, but I kept up good. My counselor asked me to consider going to the integrating. This was back in 1963. I said, you know, I couldn't do that. You know how I feel about different stuff. But she said, you know, I think it would be a good experience. Mrs. Zimmerman. So I did it. I signed up. My mom and dad and said, okay, signed up. And we had to go through, like Claudia was talking about, she was a friend, Quaker. You had to go through this orientation with the Quakers. And they kind of gave you ways of dealing with a situation in a non-violent situation and all kinds of things like that. When I got there, it was what I thought it was. I didn't live that far from the community, so I knew exactly what the community was like. And I had about two fights the first day. So, but you could smoke. If your parents gave you permission, you could smoke. They had a place. But they wouldn't let me on there. So I said, y'all gonna let me down here because I'm gonna smoke my cigarette. It was only six black guys in the whole school. So that's about three or four more fights and stuff like that. I can smoke now. I may have to sit. So I started playing football. I played on the B team football team for about a, but one day, I think I pissed a group of them off. And anyway, the next day I went to school. At that time, I wasn't really familiar with the custom of hanging a dummy in effigy for football games. And one of the guys, Jerome, we got a fight with a couple other groups. So when I got back to school the next day, I thought they had hung Jerome. I scared the shit out of me. I said, Lord have mercy, they not hung Jerome. So I went back home. I didn't go to class. I went back home, but I knew I had to go back to school. I didn't even tell my mom. But the next day I took a shotgun and I hid it in the bushes. But I went to sleep in class. I guess all the stress. I have this thing about after stressful situations, I go to sleep. Even when I was in the military, after combat, I would go to sleep. And I went to sleep, and they found it, you know. So they told me that at the, I didn't get suspended. I got a good conversation because nobody got hurt enough. So at the end of the semester that year, they told me that they didn't think that I was good material in a way. So it went on better. I was not one of the more peaceful ones. I believe that sometimes that if pushed, if you don't stand up for yourself, it will run over you. So that, then I went on back, I went to Carver High School, which was a vocational high school. As I was working at, I worked in the machine shop, and I learned how to work on heavy machines if I lost my finger. And I got it cut off, so I had to finish school through summer school. So after I left school, I went into the military, but because of my training there, I didn't have to go to tech school. I was able to go on-the-job training.
What did you think when they told you that you weren't a good fit?
Well, it's just one of those situations where, you know, there's a lot of times that in a society like that, I was told a lot of times I would never, you know, be able to do what I wanted to do because I was black. And my wife gave me a poster one time that I used to keep in my office. The best revenge is doing what people say you can't do. So, if you say I can't do it, then I'm going to show you. So, that's the way I've grown up.
And when you saw that effigy of Jerome, do you remember exactly what you were thinking? I know you said you were really scared.
Yeah, I said it. Should have been hung around. I'd be next because I was in the fight too.
Yeah.
But if I was, that's why I got the protection to protect myself.
And you mentioned other fights. Were those like?
The fist fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, the school fight.
Did anyone ever make any comments to you?
Oh, girl, yeah. If you're talking about racial, those are things you don't, that's a part of life back in the time. And I remember we used to walk home, and there was about four or five of us used to walk home. And the school bus with the white kids would drive by, and I remember them throwing hats of human feces at us out of the bus. So, you know, it's some of that stuff. That's just the way it was. And you deal with it. So a lot of times when you talk to people, people live in nostalgia. You see things from the world in which you grew up in. And what your life was not necessarily somebody else's life. So a lot of people, it's just like a lot of people were talking about different groups and diverse groups and stuff. How can you deal with that? I've been black all my life. I've been dealing with bullshit all my life. So, you know, I got to take care of that. And I can't really, who am I to judge? That's the way I look at it. Who am I to judge? I used to have an ex-father-in-law who used to tell me, if a man took half of his life trying to figure out what his problems was, and the other half trying to fix them, he wouldn't have time to be in nobody else's business. And that's the way I kind of try to live my life. I know I've done some dumb stuff in my life. Some real stupid stuff. But that's all a part of If you don't make no mistake, you ain't going nowhere.
Earlier, too, you mentioned a conversation with your school counselor, and you said, you know how I feel about that. What did you mean?
I didn't... Back then, is that... I wasn't totally militant, but I was not a pacifist. And I'm not going to take a lot of what, you know, what I got to go through, but I'll give it my best shot. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to give it my best shot, you know. And that's where it led.
When was the first time, like, do you remember a time when you kind of became aware of, like, the differences between being white and black? How old would you say you were?
That question has come up a lot in different ways, but I think I've always known. You live in a system where you didn't associate with whites. The whites you knew were over there, and you were over here. So you know that there has to be a difference. If you're over here, you're over here, and they're over there, and you can't cross over there. So something's wrong with it. And then, you know, as you're growing up, you go to different stores and things with your parents, and you know that you can't do things that you see other white little kids doing. So there's a difference. I remember one time, my father used to work with this company down on Ivy Street, and he got hurt, something like that. And he had sent me down there to take a message to the guy he worked for. And evidently, you know, like the guy said something derogatory, I can't remember what it was, but I knew it pissed me off because, you know, about my dad. And you begin to learn where you fit into the system. So you learn how to deal with the system. I'll answer your questions. What's the next question?
So when exactly did you go into the military?
I went into the military November 21st, 1966. I turned 18 in August, and in November, I was on a plane to San Antonio.
Another, like, backtracking question. We'll go back to your military service. So what did you think of, like, you know, obviously, like, desegregation, like, civil rights movement, like, what were your thoughts on it?
One of the things, okay, if I went to the school, they said it would help the system. I didn't care much about integration as to maybe we can get to have the same things they got. I wanted a brand new book. I didn't want a book that anybody else had marked in. I wanted a nice looking school. The school we went to was cool and everything like that. And the school spirit was great. But it was old. Why can't we get something new? And you know, you want to see what was so special about the other side. And whatnot. I think when I remember this little girl, she loaned me a pencil one day. You remember little things like that, you know, where other ones, you could see the hate in their eyes. I mean, like, you could literally see hate in people's eyes and stuff. So you deal with that. But you know, you got to deal with it to survive and to get out of it.
What was your first day like at Roosevelt High?
You asked me to go back almost 50 years. 50 years. That's over 50 years. That's over half a century, Bill. They were more surprised than I was. It's like, but, you know, you can't sit here. You see a chair move to keep you from sitting there. So teacher pointed you out, go over there and sit down. Things like that.
How were the teachers? Did they support you, or do you feel like they were kind of forced?
A lot of teachers were forced in a situation that they really didn't want to be in. And you can't just change your nature just because, you know, your job say you got to be there. But for the most part, they were, I would say, except for a few of them, a couple of them, they were professional. They did what they had to do, and they got it thrown out of there.
And the couple who weren't, what were they like?
Okay, you can just go ahead and sit. It won't, if I don't acknowledge you, you're not there. So a lot of times it's not being acknowledged. And that's the safest for most everybody. I exist because you acknowledge that I'm there. If you don't acknowledge me, I ain't there.
How did that make you feel?
Almost defiant, I put the, well, a more polite word. I'll show you. I guess that's what has been one of my biggest problems, even in the military. Why? Why? But that's what books do to you. The more I learned, the dumber I felt. You know, the more I got into a book, the more I read books. One of my favorite heroes, I think I told you that one time. Two of my favorite heroes was Genghis Khan and Chief Crazy Horse. Both of them defied the odds. And so it ain't defying odds, it's just that believing in yourself and your dream. As Langston Hughes once said, last part of his poem, a man without dreams is like a broken winged bird that cannot fly. I gotta have my dream. I gotta have, and it's the journey, you know. I know what's out where I say I want to go, but I just want to take this journey. And that's not me, or that's me. Are you getting tired?
No, I'm thinking, absorbing. So what did you think, though, of like the civil rights movement on the whole? I know you said you were more militant, so did you tend to view it in a positive light, or did you think changes needed to be made?
Changes definitely need to be made. Because, you know, I want to be able to go in this, I remember, long before the sit-ins, we used to go into restaurants like downtown, and like in the sit-in, they would come in and they'd sit down a bit. But what we used to do, we'll go in and we'll sit at the table. Then you have a couple of guys being a lookout to the police and stuff, and then we'll get up and run, you know. But that was the way of, because this was back in the early 50s and stuff like that, before a lot of, but it was our way of fighting back. I even had a chance to see Stokely Carmichael once. I lived in the community where he came to, and I heard him talk. I went to a school. The school I went to when I first went in, David T. Howard, we had men teachers, black men teachers. You don't have that much now. And that was significant at the time. And a lot of people say, well, you don't have black men in the black community. Why not? Because you got a third of them in jail in the prison system that's been systematically put in there as commodity for an ever-growing prison system. Then you got another part of them in your military, and you got another part of them that's on dope that you brought back to create a dope. One of the things the Viet Cong used to say, because they used to, I mean, they just about gave dope to the GIs, and what they would say that, if I don't have to shoot you, because if you're so physically impaired, you become a casualty, you're a walking casualty. So that is part of the system that put a lot of black men in jail and in dependency. And then you don't have that positive black image there. So, how you think I feel about this system?
Do you remember, like, when you first got to vote?
First got what?
When you first got to vote.
Yeah, I was, I was in basic training. I'm trying to figure out how did we do it. Because it was, I can't remember really, but I know I voted. Because I said, I swore I would vote. I told you one of my cousins got killed for voting. You ever heard of, my dad's first cousin, a guy by the name of Maceo Snipes? That was my dad's first cousin. And it's been drilled in all of us and stuff like that over the years. And a lot of the folks in my family believe in yourself and that doing that education and voting and things like that, it can get work in the system to help make it grow. But then I believe that also you have to sometimes excite the system to evoke a change.
So when you say that you were a little bit more militant, did you ever, like, were you ever involved with any of the more black militant groups, or was that just your personal ideology?
When I was in Vietnam, we used to have this group called BUCK. You're not supposed to really have groups in the military, but they're all over the place, called Black Unity Congress. And I was Minister of Information. Because I worked, I was security policeman, I was a policeman and stuff. If we get in trouble and stuff like that, then knowing things of the military code, the code of military justice and stuff, we could utilize the law to try to protect ourselves and stuff like that. And I read a lot, and that's what I did.
So another question for you. When you entered the military, that's kind of just right after civil rights.
No. The civil rights was right in the middle of the civil rights.
Okay.
The Vietnam, that area. Because I was in the military when Martin Luther King assassinated.
Okay.
And one of the things about that is that you make an oath to this country. Now, this is a screwed up country in a lot of ways, but it's my country. I come from a screwed up family, but it's my family. And the thing of it is how do I make it better? And you work within it, even if you have to fight your sisters and brothers physically sometimes, but it's your way of saying, okay, I believe it's strong enough that I got to fight you so that you know that this is the way I see it, because your way is not always right. So, and it's like when King got shot, all of us, especially military police got put on alert. I'll never forget. I was going to see my mother, because my mother lived in Elizabeth, New Jersey. My grandmother lived in Newark. And they put us all on shutdown. You know, we on standby. We couldn't go nowhere. And then we had to learn riot control. And where I was, they sent that 82nd Airborne out. So, and we were the one that guarded the planes and all that stuff for the 82nd Airborne to go. So how would you feel, I'm asking you a question, if this society was blocking your progress toward the American dream, but you got to protect everything that you desire that they deny you?
Yeah. It would be very difficult.
Right. So, but once you out in places like Vietnam and stuff like that, it's in certain areas you have to forget about that or you won't make it back home.
Yeah. So what was your experience like in Vietnam?
Like in what way?
Like, how would you personally assess it? Like, did your feelings change? Were you initially against the Vietnam War when you were deployed? Or did you think it was, like, a just cause? And what was your experience in the country? And how did your views, like, what were your views kind of after your deployment?
That was bullshit afterwards. When I first went over, I thought, fighting for my country. When I first got over there, I was in the Air Force. I ain't gonna do no combat, stuff like that. But that proved to be a lie. Ask me some more questions.
Okay. So what would you say was your primary duties in the Air Force in Vietnam?
When I first got over there, I went over there as military police. And I was to guard the base and work within the police system there. Okay, that was simple, I thought. But you had two types. You had law enforcement and you had security. And back in those days, 60, the military police, the Air Force was only about, as a unit, was only about 35 years old. So in Vietnam, a lot of our organization was really coming into being. And as a military police, what we did, the Army took care of the outside of the perimeter, and the Air Force took care of the inside, and that means everything. And so what I did when I first got there, which is one of the things that I look at, you know, like when you, that border that they're doing now in Mexico?
Yeah.
Where they're pulling all that Constantino wire? We did that. Because I remember when that first day, getting off the plane, we were driving on the back of the truck, going to our unit, and I saw these guys pulling that Constantino wire. And it was, you got three strands. You got a roll here, roll here, roll on top. And then you got outer perimeter. It's to keep people from coming in. Now, that reminded me a whole year, I knew what that, but I thought about it. But the first thing I thought about was Vietnam when I saw them doing that at the Mexican border. And also getting back to Vietnam, they worried about money. Because when we came in the country, we had what they call greenbacks, green dollar bills. So you had to swap that out for what they call military payment certificates, because the Vietnamese could steal the greenbacks and sell it on the black market because you got more money, and which increased their war chest. And then you guarded places. I remember about a week or so after we got in, they sent a group of us, and we had to go through this training with the 101st Airborne. They sent us to this warfare training. We had already had to go through, as cops, had to go through a specialized training before we got over there. So then we went to this other. So then they would put us on specialized duties and guard duties and stuff. I'm trying to think of what was really significant about it. That was my first year. Went through a lot of rocket attacks, a couple of ground attacks, stuff like that. I went through some incidents. Then, I'm trying to think, what about it?
What were those, like, rocket attacks?
Don't ask me.